Hey, Leading Learning listener, if you represent a membership organization looking for ways to expand your online course catalog rapidly with high-quality content, we have good news.
At leadinglearning.com/AMA, you can find out how to make online training from the American Management Association available to your learners.
Through a partnership between AMA and Tagoras, the parent company of Leading Learning, you can give your learners access to more than 70 e-learning modules covering essential business topics ranging from leading and innovating to managing projects effectively to working in hybrid teams.
For details on how to grow your catalog with courses from a true global leader in management training, visit leadinglearning.com/AMA.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode 101 of the Leading Learning Podcast. In this episode, we talk with Katie Hill, Associate Director of DIA Learning at DIA, the Drug Information Association. As always, though, before we turn to the interview, we want to thank your membership, the podcast sponsor for the third quarter of 2017. Your membership's learning management system is specifically designed for professional education with a highly flexible and intuitive system that customizes the learning experience. Your membership's LMS seamlessly integrates with key systems to manage all of your educational content formats in one central location, while providing powerful tools to create and deliver assessments, evaluations, and learning communities. You can find out more about your membership at yourmembership.com.
For our resource for this episode, we are once again highlighting the Tagoras Platform Directory for Learning Businesses because we want to be sure that folks know about this resource. As some listeners may know, we have for many years published a report on association learning management systems. We retired that report last year, and we've now introduced the platform directory as the new way that we're providing information for organizations seeking to find and implement a learning technology platform. This is a free resource that profiles 30 different companies that are a good fit for trade and professional associations, as well as other learning businesses. You can access the directory by going to tagoras.com/learning-platforms, and we'll also have a link to the directory in the show notes for this episode, which you can find at leadinglearning.com/episode101.
Definitely do check out the directory and let others at your organization know about it. It's very high value, and of course, it is free. But more importantly, at this very minute, you definitely want to stick around for our interview with Katie Hill. Salisa, I know that at least some of your focus in talking with Katie was on her efforts to revitalize, to really breathe some new life into DIA's e-learning efforts. Can you tell us a bit more about what you'll be talking about with Katie?
Yes, Katie and I cover a range of topics, including what DIA is doing differently with learning. So DIA has spent the last few years revamping their core curricula, and they've branched out into B2B sales, and that has led to the need for business development roles and account manager roles. And while they've made a lot of changes already, more are in store. So we talked about what DIA is starting to do with quick and dirty learning, so ways to keep the costs and timeline down for online learning. And we also talked some about the plans that they have for badging, because they're going to be piloting digital badges next year with a longer-term vision of creating stackable credentials. They're also working on a subscription model to bundle up learning, particularly micro-learning for individual learners. So a lot's going on, and Katie is very hands-on with all that's in the works and all that's happening, and she knows the ins and outs very well, but she also has a really clear big-picture vision of what DIA is doing with learning.
So this is clearly a really action-packed episode. You've mentioned business-to-business sales, subscriptions, micro-learning, digital badging. I mean, these are all top-of-mind topics, I know, for many, many Leading Learning listeners. So without further ado, let's get on to the interview with Katie Hill.
Hello, lifelong learners and leaders of learning. I'm Salisa Steele, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast. And today, I'm excited to be joined by Katie Hill. Katie serves as Associate Director of DIA Learning at DIA, the Drug Information Association, which serves all involved in healthcare product development and lifecycle management. Katie is responsible for the DIA Global Learning Strategy that really drives the development and dissemination of curriculum for the global learning portfolio. So, Katie, thanks for making time for the Leading Learning Podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And since I offered a pretty brief introduction there, would you start off by saying a little bit more about DIA, you know, whom it is that you serve and how you serve them?
Sure. So DIA serves, as you mentioned, a diverse group of individuals who are involved in healthcare product development. It includes people from academia, industry, regulatory agencies, and patient groups. We bring them all together in a neutral forum to exchange information and knowledge through our conferences and training, as well as our communities and publications, with the goal of advancing scientific and medical innovation.
Well, great. And so one thing that I'm particularly interested in is how DIA thinks about its role as an education provider. And so I'd love to hear your thoughts on where learning and education fit in with DIA's overarching mission and vision.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely one of our key pieces of our mission is that through education is one of the main ways that we connect all those stakeholders that I just mentioned together to exchange that information and hopefully bring healthcare products to the market quicker and safer and more effectively for patients. So I would say education is actually one of the key ways that we accomplish that.
All right. So education front and center in what DIA does. And so maybe talk a little bit about the kind of learning that you offer currently. And then if you feel led, maybe talk about some of your ideas and plans for where you want to go with learning and education in the future.
Sure. So DIA, we offer, because we do cover such a broad range of individuals who work in the industry, which actually makes us somewhat unique, is that we're multidisciplinary. We do offer a lot of different curricula. So we have courses and conferences in the area of safety and pharmacovigilance, regulatory affairs, clinical research and operations, and medical affairs. And then within, you know, all of those areas, we offer learning formats that range from, you know, your traditional face-to-face learning as well as online learning, and then blended learning, which we are doing more of and trying to be very strategic about the pieces of learning that we develop in a face-to-face, knowing that it's getting more and more difficult for people to be out of the office for any extended period of time. So we're trying to be creative with pre-work and post-work to create some blended learning offerings for people.
And so I know from talking with you before this interview that one of the things you've done in relatively recent history is kind of move away from a focus or certainly a solitary focus on selling learning to individual members, and you've moved more towards the B2B sales. So would you talk a little bit about what pushed you in the direction of the B2B sales and how that switch in focus has played out so far?
Sure, yeah. So we saw the opportunity to expand our reach beyond your traditional individual enrollments in education to really reach out to companies and work with them directly in a couple different ways. Specifically in learning, we have several training solutions that we started to offer more for that B2B model, which includes customizing our courses to meet the unique needs of that company. So it might be process-based or procedures that are unique to them. And then so we modify our courses to make sure that they fit their needs, and then we deliver them on-site at their location just for their employees. We've also really build a program around group purchases of our online learning courses. We had a lot of individual members buying our online courses, but then we were hearing from companies that it would be valuable for them to have consistent training for a whole team or a whole function within their company, and to have that same baseline training across all. So we've been working with companies now to do either group purchases or multiple registrations in larger chunks, and we push it out to the whole group at the same time, which the companies have found very valuable. And then we've also started really working with companies. You know, we started with the customizing courses first, and then the group purchases of online courses. And then now what we're seeing is, because there's so many options, we're now working with companies to create custom curriculum that's just directed at the needs of their team, department, a whole function within a company. And we can design our learning and customize it to their needs. And again, this could be a face-to-face course, or it could be a mix of online learning or blended learning. So we're doing all of that. But what it has meant for us internally in terms of staff and our internal staffing model is that it really was a mind shift. We realized once we started working with companies that we needed a business development function that would proactively be seeking these strategic partnerships with companies and help, you know, educate them on the type of DI learning that we could help them with. And then, you know, over time, of course, as you start developing these relationships, we work with these companies now year after year once we have an established relationship. So what we're finding is now we almost need an account management function. So we've started to do that internally. So the business development function is really key to seeking the new opportunities and establishing a really solid foundation with the company. But then over time, as you work with that company, you need to really make sure that you have some kind of account management, ongoing support, you know, year to year, and consistent, so that it can help the relationship grow as the company's needs change. So we're working on both those areas. We have built up internal expertise in those areas and actually have increased our staffing count to specifically address those needs.
Well, that's great. I mean, I think obviously the business development function, you know, makes sense that if you're going to make those B2B sales to have the folks out there doing it, but then it's great to have that realization that you also need the account management to keep that relationship going. Did you also have to sort of bulk up in the instructional design and course curriculum developer front as well as you're branching out into doing more customized work?
Definitely. And also instructional design, but also really becoming much more heavily involved from a needs analysis point of view with companies. Uh-huh. So, you know, sometimes they come to us with I want this course, which is fine if they realize that that's their specific need. But many times they don't. Many times they're just coming to us with a business problem they're looking for us to solve. Mm. Sometimes it's a compliance issue, or they need compliance training to stay in compliance with regulatory authorities. Sometimes it's, you know, we want to improve the way we function as a team or as a group, and, you know, need better training and processes and procedures. We've really built up some expertise internally to help companies work through that needs analysis and sort of gap analysis to determine how we can help them fill that need and then design. And this is actually what has led to us actually creating custom curricula for companies. You know, it might not just be a one-off course. Now it's a series of courses and some online training in between. And so it's a much more longer-term training engagement with that company. So we have built up instructional design expertise, as well as that our account managers are pretty well versed in instructional design as well. So usually we find a really good fit internally and help them to sort of develop the courses that they need or the curriculum that they need. And then that account manager sort of helps them morph as their needs change over a year or two and they have a curriculum, you know, how can we modify it to meet any new business challenges or things that they're looking to improve on within the curriculum that we've established for them.
That sounds great. Sounds like you have a real opportunity to focus on the problems and the challenges that those organizations are facing and then that those learners are facing in that context, which obviously then will make that learning that happens that much more meaningful. One of the other things I know from talking with you earlier is that you've spent the last few years kind of reviving and reinvigorating some of your self-paced online learning. So would you talk a little bit about some of the changes that you've made in that area and what's driven some of those changes?
Yes. Yeah, so we have spent quite a bit of time, probably a 2 to 3 year strategic plan we had around this, around really modernizing our core self-paced online courses, both from an instructional design perspective, but also making sure that we're incorporating multimedia and that they have a modern look and feel to them. We want to keep our learners engaged. So we are pretty happy with the outcome. We've really made some progress in incorporating instructional design best practices like micro-learning and gamification, scenario-based learning and case studies, really making the learning engaging, highly interactive, and, you know, hopefully it will improve the learning outcome for the individual learner through making all those changes. So we're very excited about that. And then now that we have this sort of core curriculum established in the self-paced and we feel really, really good about the product that we've developed, we are beginning to look at even a newer format where we are developing courses in an online format, but I call it sort of the quick and dirty way of developing e-learning because, you know, the e-learning can be very costly and very time-consuming if you are using certain authoring tools and depending on the amount of content you want to cover. But we found that we need a format that's much more agile in approach because we have our industry so heavily regulated and regulations, especially globally, are changing. And so, you know, there's certain content that you would hold off putting in your traditional self-paced e-learning course because, you know, it's changing so often. It's very difficult and costly to keep it updated. So we've worked on a new format where we're going to be streaming video, but within an authoring tool. So it will still be self-paced and it will have some interactive elements, but the streaming video allows us to really push out some updated content. Anytime regulation changes, it's very easy for us to update the pieces within it and also allows us to really focus on that micro-learning concept where you can break it into much smaller chunks within the course of streaming video and then interaction. So that's really helpful. And although some of the traditional authoring tools, you can upload video, SCORM does not like, I would say, a lot of video when you're uploading it versus streaming because it can kind of bog down the format and make it difficult, especially for learners who might have bandwidth issues in other countries. So we spent quite a bit of time really trying to make sure that we had a streaming option to stream the video in. And so we're really excited to be moving into that new format this year and really focusing even more time and energy on it coming in 2018.
Well, great. And so, I mean, you said yourself that it's been, you know, a work in progress for 2 or 3 years, that redeveloping of the core curriculum. What do you know at this point in terms of kind of how it's being received, those changes that you've been made? Are you getting good feedback or, you know, what kind of evaluations do you have in place to understand the benefit that learners might be seeing from those changes that you've made?
So we wanted to make sure we had really key measures in place to measure the difference. So we're using a couple of different mechanisms. We're using pre-test and post-test scores connected with each of those core courses that are online. And so we can actually measure the difference in scores pre and post. So we make sure we're accomplishing the learning objectives for the course. And then also we're considering the Net Promoter Score, which we're using as a measure in our evaluations. And so we have data from before, and now we have data for the new courses. And we're very pleased at what we're seeing in the results of both of those.
That's great. That's great that you have the numbers to help prove what you went in thinking, which is that these would be a better option for the learners. You talked about it, I think, a little bit, or when you were getting into talking about the, you know, streaming video, which can be helpful for learners in countries where bandwidth can be an issue. I mean, DIA is a global association. Maybe talk just a little bit about what you've noticed about dealing with learners outside the U.S., the extent that there are differences that have come up.
So, there's the instructional design piece. You know, they have different learning needs and preferences oftentimes regionally. So aside from those, one of the things that we've really sort of learned over time is that we really need to spend a lot of time testing any new learning technology implementation, whether that's, you know, a learning management system, a website, any kind of SCORM course, or, you know, any kind of learning technology as a whole, and make sure that we do our homework before we implement it. We don't want to frustrate the learners in the process of trying to get the information. So, and it can be a challenge. You try to anticipate as much as you can, and we have a very supportive IT department that helps us to really test some of those and firewall bandwidth issues, things that sometimes you would have never thought can present some challenges when you launch something. So we really spend quite a bit of time in testing anything before we release anything new.
And so when you're dealing with that testing, I do feel like testing can often be something that gets shortchanged in the rollout of any new product. But you mentioned you have a very supportive IT department. But then does a lot of that testing also fall within kind of the education function as well? Or how do you handle this, just the pure staffing of the testing work?
Yeah, so we do spend, we see the primary role falls within the education role. And IT is sort of the supporting function and helps us anywhere, you know, as we need additional support. But we really take the testing on ourselves, and we have regional offices around the world. So we're oftentimes working with them as well when we go to launch a course. For instance, we launched a course and we noticed that the performance was a little slower for our customers in China. So we work with our China office to put some things up in a staging environment and do some additional testing that the staff there was actually able to do for us and report back any challenges they had. So we're hoping to catch those kind of things working as a team together, both with IT and the regional offices, to catch them before we release anything like that.
Great. So, you know, we've been talking pretty specifically about what, DIA is doing and what you've been doing, some of the changes you're making. If we pick up for just a little bit and kind of think more broadly about the major opportunities and threats that you see for DIA as a provider of learning, what are those opportunities and those threats? And I'm thinking there may be some threats and opportunities that apply to other associations as well, but certainly interested in what you're seeing from DIA's perspective.
So I would say it's an opportunity and a challenge at the same time, is just the rapidly changing learning environment, but also the rapidly changing regulations within our industry. Mm-hmm. Both of those things are challenges because it's changing so quickly. So in terms of learning, trying to stay on top of new trends and test new ways of offering new formats, new ways of offering learning is sometimes challenging in terms of bandwidth and making sure that you are staying current. But it can be a great opportunity if there's so much changing on a regular basis and technology's added a whole nother sort of element to learning that you have to stay on top of those trends as well. but I feel like there's a lot of opportunity there. And the same thing with the regulatory changes for us. Sometimes you release a product, and then almost as soon as you release it, something changed that that was not expected in the regulations. And so sometimes you're going back into something you just finished, and you weren't really planning on modifying so soon. But just, you know, making sure that the information is current and relevant for our learners sometimes is a challenge, but is an opportunity as well. It provides a lot of opportunity for learning for our customers.
And so if we keep kind of at the big picture level, you know, when you think about what's going on in learning these days and some of these changes that are happening in this fast-paced environment that you were just talking about, you know, is there a particular, you know, trend or change or something that's happening in learning that's really exciting to you and it could be something you're taking advantage of at DIA or could just be something out there more broadly in the learning landscape?
So one of the things we're piloting this year, which we're very excited to be working on, is we're working with our LMS vendor, who's Your Membership Learning, on a badging pilot to offer digital badging to a subset of our learners in a specific curriculum area. And I think that's very exciting, and I hope that after the pilot, we'll be able to expand it to other curricula as well. But it provides the opportunity for us to give the learner the ability to put out a visual representation of the skill or the knowledge that they've achieved through the professional development activities that they're taking. But I really see that the higher level value with badging will be the stackable badges and the fact that those badges can provide sort of this professional development pathway for members. So it's not a one and done, that they can see that they're building along the way and that there's a goal in mind. So I really think that is very exciting. The other thing that we've just started exploring and we're going to test it a little bit and see if it's a benefit for our members is a subscription model. Mm. You know, how can we be flexible in allowing some other models other than your standard registration model for online courses, especially in terms of micro-learning and maybe small segments of learning in a, you know, that might make sense more in a subscription model.
Well, great. Yeah, I think both of those are very interesting, that subscription model to give learners sort of some choice and also that sense of it's right, not just the one and done, but there's a need for ongoing learning and to provide a mechanism for them to access that. And then you mentioned that same thing too with the stacked credentials and heading that route with the badges, where again, it is this idea that everything's building and trying to help support them as they grow and adapt in this rapidly changing world and with all those regulatory changes. So I think related to that, I mean, you know, you're diving into these things, like badges, like, subscription models, you know, you're making changes where I'm guessing being taken out, of areas where you have direct experience and are kind of trying out new things. So I think this might tie into the next to last question that we always like to ask everyone who comes on the Leading Learning Podcast, which is, you know, how do you keep up on your own lifelong learning? What do you do to make sure that you're keeping up with the latest trends and developments?
So I spend a lot of time reading blogs, both learning and industry specific blogs, to try and stay up to date. And also staying connected on social media to sort of monitor for trends and changes. I'm also a member of APD, and so I find a lot of their webinars and courses are very helpful in this area. And so those are the primary methods. My learning team as a whole, we're always sort of scouring, you know, blogs and social media to gather not only industry needs, but some new trends coming in learning and learning technology. And so we're always brainstorming and trying out new things just to stay current and see sort of what sticks. Not everything's going to work, but we want to try new things.
Well, that's great. So there's the what you can do on your own, and then there's that idea of the peer-based learning as well, where you're sharing and helping each other. So the last question I'll ask is just, if learners want to know more about DIA, where would you have them go? And then also, to the extent that you're open to it, how can they connect with you?
So our website has a lot of information about our publications and training, as well as conferences and our communities. So they can go to diaglobal.org is our website. And I'd be happy to connect with anyone on LinkedIn who has questions or is just looking to connect as an informal social learning. I would love that opportunity.
Well, great. Thanks so much for your time today, Katie. I've really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you very much.
That wraps up our interview with Katie Hill. As we're exiting, we want to say thanks once again to Your Membership. You can find out more about Your Membership and all it offers at yourmembership.com.
To get show notes for this episode, go to leadinglearning.com/episode101. At that link, you're going to see various options for subscribing to the Leading Learning Podcast. And if you are getting value out of what you hear here, we would be truly grateful if you would subscribe.
We would also be truly grateful if you would take just a minute to give us a rating and review on iTunes. It's very easy to do. You just have to go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes, and that'll put you in the right place. We'd really appreciate it because it lets us know that you value the podcast. And when there are reviews for a podcast, it also makes it easier for others to find it and understand the value it offers.
And please consider telling others about the podcast. You can send out a tweet by going to leadinglearning.com/share. That will give you some pre-populated language to tweet out. Or if tweeting isn't your thing, just pick another social network of your preference and spread the good word that way.
So thanks again, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.